in the teachings of the Buddha. You know, the virtue or sila, we call it sila, the keeping of precepts. The virtue of, I mean, the purity of virtue is very important because it is here said the firm ground of virtue, right?
Right, on the feet of,
yeah,
feet of energy on the ground of virtue.
Yes, so sila is compared to ground and energy is compared to the feet and faith or confidence is compared to hand. Because if you have a hand, you can pick up things you want to pick up. If you do not have hands, you cannot. In the same way, if you do not have any confidence, then you cannot pick up kusala, a good thing. So the hand is compared confidence or faith is compared to a hand. And the foot, maga, is compared to an axe, which cuts which cuts altogether the mental defilements.
So if your conduct isn't clearly virtuous, then there's no way that you're not going to be involved in not creating karma, because if your conduct is not virtuous, then you will, whatever you call yourself, you'll still be correct.
Yeah, that's right, yes.
What is an example of functional?
Functional is something like, I gave this example, but Chinua didn't like that. He said it was too, maybe, I don't know. It's like a fruit which does not bear, I mean, a tree which does not bear fruit. It still is growing, living, it still has branches and leaves and so on, but it does not bear fruit. Something like that. An arahant, after becoming an arahant, still do good things. They still teach people, still practice meditation, and still help other people. But all their actions do not constitute karma, because they have eradicated the root of karma, I mean, the root of existence, that is the craving and ignorance. So their actions are just actions. And their actions do not bring reactions, I mean, results. We, in Burma, at the New Year ceremony, the cannons were fired. And so, when something is just noise and has no substance, we say, this is the New Year cannon or something like that. What do you call that? Volley of something? So it is something like that. Fruits, I mean, trees bearing no fruit. They are still.
It's called a salute.
A salute of, yes. Okay, then. Second one, Sammasambuddha. Now, Buddha, we use the word Buddha to refer to him, but his full epithet is Sammasambuddha. Now, Samma is one prefix, Sam is one prefix. There are two prefixes here, and Buddha. Samma means rightly, and Sam means by himself. So he discovers the Four Noble Truths. Buddha means to know. So he knows the Four Noble Truths, or he discovers the Four Noble Truths rightly and without assistance from any person, by himself. So we emphasize this when we talk about Buddha. Buddha are those persons who do not need any teachers. So Bodhisattva went to two teachers before he became the Buddha. But he did not follow their advice up to the attainment of Buddhahood. He discarded their practice and then went to a place and practiced by himself. So we say Buddha had no teachers. And this is emphasized by this Sambuddha. So Sambuddha means self-enlightened. And Sammabuddha means rightly enlightened. So Sammasambuddha means rightly self-enlightened, something like that. And here, to know means to know the Four Noble Truths. And then, on page 211, paragraph 28, the other things which Buddha knew are given. There are six bases, six groups of consciousness, and so on. So these are the topics taught in Abhidhamma. Actually, they are found in Sutta Vidaka too, but their treatment in full can be found in Abhidhamma. Sometimes people take Abhidhamma to be a separate thing, not connected with a Sutta or something like that. But actually, those we found in the Abhidhamma, most of them are also taught in Sutta Vidaka. That is why we need a knowledge of Abhidhamma to understand the suttas. We should not separate them, treat them as separate. We cannot study suttas without a knowledge of Abhidhamma. That means, that is, if we want to understand fully and correctly. So these are topics taught in Abhidhamma and Sutta also. So here, Buddha's penetration into the Four Noble Truths, or discovery of Four Noble Truths, is meant by this second attribute, Samma Sambuddha.
Now, Mahayana, it seems they thought that an arhat is one who doesn't have it, who is enlightened. By himself without, well, actually, it's Pratyeka Buddha is one.
Yes, Pratyeka Buddha is one who is enlightened by himself.
And that's usually distinguished from a Buddha who isn't at least totally enlightened by himself or in a vacuum with other people.
The Pratyeka Buddhas are not called Samma Sambuddha. They are called just Sambuddha. All of Pratyeka Buddhas, but not Samma Sambuddha.
So they're not rightly.
Rightly means in all aspects, they do not understand in all aspects of the Dhamma. They are self enlightened persons, but their knowledge may be not as wide as comprehensive as that of the Buddhas. And also, sometimes they are called silent Buddhas. That comes from the fact that they do not teach much. Mm-hmm. Although sometimes they teach, but they seldom teach. They want to be away from people and live in the forest. And so they are called silent Buddhas.
Well, sometimes it's that because they weren't taught, it's hard for them to teach. And that's usually kind of
And also they appear only when there are no Buddhas. So they appear between interims of Buddhas. Uh-huh. Then I hope you read the footnotes. The footnotes are very good. So we'll go next to the third one. He is endowed with clear vision and virtuous conduct. So there are two words here, vijja and charana. Vijja means understanding or vision, and charana means conduct. So Buddha is endowed with both clear vision and conduct. Now there are three kinds of clear vision. That means remembering his past lives, and then divine eye and destruction of defilements. They are called three clear visions. So whenever three is mentioned, these are meant. Remembering past lives, divine vision, and destruction of defilements. These are called three clear visions. Sometimes eight kinds of clear visions are mentioned. So in that case, there are some more. So in the eight kinds as stated in the Ambatta Sutta, for there are eight kinds of clear vision as stated, and the eight are made up of six kinds of direct knowledge, together with insight and the supernormal power of the mind-made body. So there are eight kinds of clear visions mentioned in that sutta. But if you go to that sutta, you will not find them clearly stated, because in Pali, when they don't want to repeat, they just put a sign there. Like you use dots, right? Three or four dots. Uh-huh. So in Pali also, they use the letter PA or sometimes LA. So when you see this, yeah, you understand that there are some things missing here, or they don't want to repeat. So you have to go back to where the first occur. And if you don't know where to find them, then you'll be lost. So today I looked them up in D1, page 100, and they were not printed in the book, because they were mentioned in the second sutta, the Ambatta Sutta, the third sutta. So this is one problem with us modern people. These books are meant to be read from the beginning to the end, not just pick up a sutta in the middle and you read it and you understand. So they are meant to be studied from the beginning. I can give you the page numbers of the English translation. So the eight are the six kinds of direct knowledge. That means the performing miracles, that is one. And then divine ear. And then reading other people's mind. And remembering past lives. And then divine eye. You get five, right?
Yeah.
And then destruction of mental defilements, six. And then two are mentioned here. Vipassana, insight, and supernormal power of the mind-made body. That means you practice jhana and then you are able to multiply yourself. So these are the eight kinds of clear vision stated in that sutta. And by contact is meant 15 things here. Restraint by virtue, guarding the doors of the sense faculties, knowledge of the right amount in eating, devotion to wakefulness, the seven good states, there in the footnote, and the four jhanas of the fine material sphere. For it is precisely by means of these 15 things that a noble disciple contacts himself, that he goes towards the deathless. That is why it is called virtue conduct, according as it is said. Now, you have to understand the Pali word charana to understand this this explanation. The word charana comes from the root chara, C-A-R-A. And chara means to walk, to go. So charana means some means of going. So these 15 are the means of going to the direction of Nibbana. And this is why it is said here, it is precisely by means of these 15 things that the noble disciple conducts himself, that he goes towards the death. That is why it is called Pali Charana. And then we'll go to the next one. Subline, paragraph 33. Now please remember the Pali word here, Sugata. Because the English translation sublime may not make much sense here. So, Sugata. Su means here, in the first meaning is good. So Su means good, and Gata means going. So Sugata means good going. That means Buddha has a good going. That is called Buddha is, that is why Buddha is called Sugata. because his going is purified and blameless. And what is that? That is a noble path. The noble eightfold path is called he has a good going. So that is the first meaning. Sugata. Now the second meaning is also gone to an excellent place. Now here gata means gone, not like in the first meaning. In the first meaning gata means going, but in the second meaning gata means gone to. Su means an excellent place. So one who has gone to an excellent place is called sugata. Here excellent place is nibbana. Now the third meaning of having gone rightly. Now su can mean also rightly. So who has gone rightly is called sugata. And rightly here means not approaching to the extremes, but following the middle path. And then last one, the fourth meaning, because of enunciating rightly. Now here, the original word is Sugada with a D, D as in David. And that D is changed to T. It's a polygrammatical explanation. So here it means Sugada. Gada means speaking or saying. And su means rightly. So one who speaks rightly is called sugata. So there are four meanings to this word. So with regard to the fourth meaning, Isoda is quoted here. Paragraph 35. Such speech as the perfect one knows to be untrue and incorrect, conducive to harm and displeasing and unwelcome to others, that he does not speak, and so on. Now, according to this sutta, there are six kinds of speeches. And only two of them Buddhas use. So those six are mentioned here in the translation of the suttas. So in brief, they mean speech which is untrue, harmful, and displeasing. Buddhas do not use such speech. And then speech which is true but harmful and displeasing to the hearers. This also Buddhas do not use. Then the third one is true beneficial. That means not harming. True beneficial but displeasing to the listeners. That Buddhas use. But here in the translation it is said, the perfect one knows the time to expound. That means if it is time to say such a speech, then Buddhas use this speech. So it may not be pleasing to the listeners, but if it is beneficial and it is true, then Buddha will say.
What is the meaning of harmful? What's harmful and what's
that
beneficial?
Means if you follow his words, then you will get benefits. Or if you follow his words, you will come to what do you call? Opposite of that. You will come to failure or something. Sometimes people talk to other people. People give advice to other people. And those advice may not be conducive to success. So, which is true, beneficial, and displeasing, Buddhas use such speeches. Then the fourth one, untrue, harmful, but pleasing to other people. Buddhas never use this. And then, true, harmful, pleasing. No, Buddha never use. Then the last one, true, beneficial, and pleasing to the listeners. So Buddha used only one of the two kinds of speeches. True, beneficial, displeasing, or true beneficial pleasing. See, the other Buddha do not use. That is why Buddha is described as Sugata, one who speaks rightly. Then knower of the world, Loka Vidu. You may have read this. It is something like in the commentary, something like a Buddhist cosmology. And not all of them are can actually be found in the suttas. Some of them can be found in the suttas, and others are developed maybe later after the death of the Buddha. So you may take them as just what do you call that?
A grain of salt.
You may take them as true or not. Because if we look at the world right now, according to the knowledge of modern science about the world, then they are very different from. And a lot Indians are, maybe the Western people say Indians are fond of using numbers, say 84,000, something like that. So here also, lower of the world. Now, there are three kinds of worlds mentioned here. The world of formations, the world of beings, and the world of location. You'll find that in paragraph 37. The world of formations, the world of beings, and the world of location. The world of formations really means the world of both animate and inanimate things, both beings and inanimate things. The world of beings means just beings, and the world of location means outside world. And so Buddha, they said that Buddha,
world?
I mean inanimate world, like the earth and mountains, rivers and so on. And if you can draw a diagram of what is mentioned here, you will get a rough picture of the Buddhist conception of the world and the other things. I mean, the suns and moons and the universe. Then, in paragraph 38, the first word, likewise, I think should go. Not likewise, but it should be for. Or maybe in detail, because paragraph 38 and those following are the detailed description of how Buddha knows the world. So one world being all beings subsist by nutriment and so on. And then, paragraph 39, he knows all beings' habits. That is very important. He knows all beings' habits, knows their inherent tendencies, knows their temperaments, knows their bends, knows them as with little dust in their eyes and with much dust on their eyes, with keen faculties and with dull faculties, with good behavior and with bad behavior, each to teach and easy to teach and hard to teach, capable and incapable of achievement. Therefore, this world of beings was known to him in all ways. So Buddha, only Buddhas have this ability of knowing exactly the beings' habits, their inherent tendencies, and so on. Even the arahants do not possess this ability. And then Buddha's understanding of the physical world may be developed. There are some statements with regard to the physical world, and then maybe they are developed later on. So this is the description of the world according to, say, the Buddhists. And also the footnote is very helpful and informative with regard to this. You will get a view of the Buddhist universe. You know, a Buddhist universe is a round thing, not like a globe, but it is round, and it is surrounded by what we call the wall cycle mountains. So there are mountains around, and then in this circle there is water, and also the four great islands. We call them the four great islands, maybe the continents. And each island has, it is said in the books, each, believe it or not, each island has 500 small islands. And in the middle of this universe, there is the Mount Sineru or Meru. And it is not visible to human beings. And surrounding the Meru, this mountain, great mountain, there are seven concentric mountains, lower mountains, seven. And in between these seven, there is water. So they are called inner oceans or something. There is the outer ocean, and then there are inner oceans, seven inner oceans. And they are the height, the Sineru is 84,000 leagues, and then the first highest mountain, the surrounding mountain is half that height, and then next one is half that height, and so on. But if you want to draw according to scale, it is very difficult. I have tried it, but I cannot. You have to draw a big drawing, not on a small paper, because half height, and so on. And that is called one world cycle. One universe. And suns and moon are said to go round this, round the Meru, the middle mountain, at its half height. And so the sun and moon are only 42,000 leagues from the earth. And the size of the sun is 50 leagues, and the size of the moon is 49 leagues. There is only one league difference between the size of the moon and size of the sun. And then the stars and planets go around them. And it is said that when the sun goes around the Meru, then it throws a shadow, right? And so when three continents are light, one continent is dark, and that is night, and the other is a day. So only one quarter of the universe is dark, and the three the other three parts are light at one time. And there are four great islands. And the south island is called Jambudvipa. And it is a place where Buddhas and all wise men and pure people are born. And that land is described as something like wide in one side, and then what about that? Sloping or something, becoming small at the other side. So that fits with India. So India is India is Jambudvipa, the southern island. So if India is southern island, then Europe should be Western Island, and China or Japan should be Eastern Island, and I think America should be the Northern Island. Because when it is day in Asia, then it is night here. So America could be the North Great Island, which is called Uttarakuru. So this is the cosmology of Buddhism. Now, there is one thing. On page 220, you see the paragraph number 43. Those lines, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, they are misplaced. The Wall Sphere Mountains line of summits plunges down into the sea just 280,000 leagues and towers up in like degree, and ringing one world element all round in its entirety. So these lines should be on page 221, just above paragraph 44, and not here. I don't know why he put these here, maybe by mistake. So these lines should be on the other page, page 221. Now here you find the moon's disk is 49 leagues across and the sun's disk is 50 leagues. Therefore this wall of location was known to him in all ways too, so he is knower of walls because he has seen the world in all ways. The Buddha is called a Loka Vidur, knower of the walls, knower of the world of beings, or physical world, and world of formations, or world of conditioned things. That's why Buddha is called knower of the worlds. And when we read the sub-commentaries, we find more of these descriptions. I don't know where they come from. Actually, not from the suttas, but I don't know what they mean. They may got them from some writings of Hindus, because there are such books in Hinduism, and so they may have got them from them. But they are not important, actually. And one thing is, so when they say Himalayas is in this book, I think, Himalayas is 500 leagues high. 500 leagues means one league is about 8 miles. So, how many miles? 4,000 miles high. Sometimes, they measure not by height, maybe by path. So, to reach a summit, you have to climb, say, a number of miles. Say, Mount Tamalpais is how many miles high? Maybe 1 mile or 2 miles high, 2 miles high. not from the sea level. I mean, measuring like with the pole, but measuring by foot.
We say, as the crow flies, direct. This is not as the crow flies.
No. Maybe that's why we have so many miles. Say, Himalaya is 500 miles high and so on. Yeah, you know, it may not be... How many miles high? Mount Everest is 5 miles high, right?
5, yeah. 25,000 feet.
But do you think, are they referring to this, the world as we know it, or the universe as we know it, or is it some kind of a mythical type of a thing? Because as you indicated, you know, the Meru cannot be seen human. So it may be, you know, some kind of a symbolic type of thing then.
Yeah, but you know, one statement contradicts another, because it is said that when three islands are light, one island is dark. So following this wall is what is meant by the loka in our books. because, you know, one part of the world is dark when the others are light. Not exactly one quarter, but something like that. Maybe their knowledge of geography is very limited in those days. And then there may be sages who just contemplate and then talked about these things. And they came to be accepted. Nobody seemed to bother about measuring the height of Himalayas or Mount Everest. And they had no way, no means of measuring the height of mountains in those days. So they may be just measuring by path. But they are not really important things. Okay. So next time, maybe about another 20 pages.